have a serious conversation about funny stuff. I'm Sam Miller.
I'm Jamie Parkinen.
And I'm cracking up. I'm Chris Alvarado.
Thanks for being with us today. It's my first time doing the introduction. I think I did it the best. You guys will vote on a poll about that.
I think you did your impression of what you think an introduction is supposed to sound like the best. You did a really good impression of like a radio host.
I would even go so far as to consider it a caricature, really.
Oh, wow. Wow, Sam.
Wow. Because I'm building caricature.
Hey.
Well, today we are going to dive into the concept of permission in performance. And I feel like that comes in a lot of different forms, but maybe mostly for our purposes today is, do performers need permission to perform certain characters, to have certain character traits, to make certain jokes? Will an audience accept that? Does the performer need the audience's permission, the director's permission, the co-performer's permission, their own permission? Just how does permission kind of wrap itself around performance? And what happens if you don't have it? It's kind of a big, mushy topic, possibly relevant to today's political ongoings. But I think it's an interesting one, and I don't know that the rules that apply, and I'm already giving my opinion here, I don't know that the rules that apply to society also apply to the stage. I think there might be a difference there. Meaning, sure, maybe don't be a jackass when you're out in the world, but on the stage you might have more of a permission to be a jackass because it's art, it's theater. So I think there's two sets of rules we can abide by, and I don't think a lot of people see it that way. I think people see, you take your out of stage persona, personality, and morals and so on, and you bring that to the stage as well. I think there's a difference there. You guys, what do you think?
I think there's a lot here. And like you said, it's kind of mushy, which is nice, though. It gives us places to go. Because I have some thoughts on it as a teacher, but just following what you said, I often think about like stand-ups. And how there will be times when a stand-up will like do a racy tweet or say something in a comedy special that it feels like half the country is upset by, and the other half says, hey, this is what they do. They push boundaries. Like, they're allowed to say these things. And then you go into like, is it an act? Is the person saying these maybe off-color remarks or some whatever stuff as a character? Is it satire? There are all these ways. But, you know, I also used to bartend for a long time at a comedy club. And there are the young – I don't know if it's young, but there are comedians that keep it pretty safe and whatever. They keep it safe. But then there are some that really push it, and they're not asking for permission. You know, they just do whatever they want to say. And those comics can be like, oh, shit, that's too much. Or sometimes it's like everybody laughs like, oh, finally somebody said something that we all feel, even though it's a little racy or whatever. So it's just there's so much there to it. There's so much there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, it's a very funny conversation to have to begin with, because sure, anyone can do anything they want at any point in time. I will never disagree with that. My goal in performing is to get people to laugh. So in some ways, I have a very practical relationship with permission, in that I have to create an environment in which people feel like they have permission to laugh. And I also think that I have to, even if it's unsaid, have the audience's permission to say what I'm saying to get them to laugh. And I take Chris's point. Like, there are definitely some comedians who push the line to push the line. I feel like 20 years ago, we had kind of reached the peak of like pushing the line, like maybe 10 years ago. Like, once Girls was a comedy show, there were no more lines to cross. Like, the lines had been crossed. I don't know what anyone's going to do at this point in time that is unique.
But think though, Sam, because also in the last 10 years, the PC culture has has gotten stronger, if you will. So yeah, I know what you're saying, but aren't we also in a place where like it's probably the most PC time in a long time? I can't speak today, but do you know what I'm saying? Where like, you know what I'm saying?
Yes and no. I mean, I don't support all of the ideas behind PC culture, but you know, back in the day, when you said you don't want to say something that's going to offend someone, 9 times out of 10, the person that you were offending was some sort of like religious, Christian, waspy person who we had these sort of like ideas of society behind. And so saying something that was against their permission was sort of transgressive and pushing the culture forward in a way. You know, what's his name? Bruce, whatever, from like the 1960s, you know, like for him to get on stage and curse without permission, or George Carlin to get in trouble by saying the 7 words you can't say on broadcast TV, like that is creating forward momentum in a lot of ways. Whereas now I feel like if you're saying something against people's permission, you're probably saying something that is retrograde in some sense. It's from the past. It's a misogynistic idea or a racist idea or a transphobic or homophobic idea. Those are the things that now we talk about as being not permissive, whereas in the past, just being homosexual wasn't permitted. So mm-hmm. I think we have to understand how our relationship to being transgressive has changed in some ways.
Wow, there's a lot there. I'm not even sure where to start, but I think that what comes to mind for me is kind of saying what you said about, you know, maybe it, when you used to transgress something 50 years ago, it was the heteronormative Christian American culture, whatever that is. And so to transgress that was your word, progressive. And to transgress now, it may be something that is regressive. That's an interesting concept to me because it implies a correctness to types of transgression. Whereas transgression to me is stepping over lines and breaking power structures. There's no right or wrong progressive or regression to it. It's about power in any form. So even if, you know, 50, 67 years ago, it was the waspy Christian values that you noted, and maybe nowadays it's more politically correct social justice values. They're both powerful in their own right. And so transgression to me is not about direction forward or backwards. It's about power. And so to put certain things off limits automatically creates a power structure that then invites transgression in my mind. And so I don't know. That's kind of my initial reaction to what you just said, Sam. What do you think about that?
I appreciate your point that transgression is agnostic, but I mean, like that just sort of means like if there's a rule, I'm going to break it. I mean, that seems to be sort of like your definition of transgression, which is totally fair. I just think that now when we're talking about having the permission of an audience, we sort of have to take the larger cultural ideas around that into play. And look, if you don't care about getting a laugh, and many performers don't care about getting a laugh, then a lot of this conversation might not apply to you. You can go on stairs and shout as much nasty stuff as you want to, and the audience will boo you out of the room, and you have been transgressive, and you haven't gotten their permission to do it, but you as a performer have permission to be an individual. So like, there's a level of that. But if you want to entertain a room of people in a city like Los Angeles, you probably want to at least have an understanding of where some lines are, where maybe they'd be okay with you transgressing in some areas, and maybe where they wouldn't be okay with you transgressing in some areas.
Let me comment on that, because let's even say that the goal is to get a laugh or to entertain, you know, and if those are the general goals of the performance, because yeah, if you have no goals of your performance, then of course you can do anything. But let's say that we want to get a laugh and entertain or whatever it is. How impossible of a task is it to try to understand what an audience wants? What does that even mean? There's 50 people in an audience with different backgrounds, different intelligence levels, different references.
Yeah, but Jamie, if it was that difficult, comedy clubs wouldn't exist. It's not that difficult because they sell out shows and people laugh constantly.
Well, that's not true.
what's not true? You don't think that the Improv or the Comedy Store has big names? You don't think if Dave Chappelle shows up, it's going to sell out and people will be enjoying themselves?
Well, I guess it depends on when it's a known performer. Because if it's a known performer, they probably have a following and the audience probably has specific expectations tied to that performer. If we're just talking about, let's just say it's a cold stage where the audience doesn't know the performers, the performance doesn't know the audience, I would say that it's almost an impossible task to try to get inside the minds of 50 audience members to say what they do or don't like. It feels like kind of a construct to me.
But there are road comics that do this for a living, that are on the road 300 days a year, going to cities they've never been to, opening or featuring for you know, bigger headliners and stuff that are, yes, I think the idea of having to get into everybody's mind is an impossible task. But all I'm trying to say is, whether I even think they're funny or not, I feel like, and by the way, we are talking about, right now I'm talking about written material, because I do want to get into the difference between saying something that we know is pre-written versus saying something improvised. But just on this written thing, don't you, I mean, like I said, there are comedy clubs across this country and across this world that people show up to and see comics they don't know, and they laugh, right? I mean, if not, there wouldn't be that business model, I would imagine.
Yeah, I guess help clarify to me, what does it have to do with permission that they laugh?
So I think that you can get people to laugh based on human universals, like love or hate, or like things that we can all kind of relate to. Food, I think, is a popular kind of a thing. And none of those are transgressive. But we can, I mean, Charlie Chaplin was internationally famous for getting people to laugh. I don't think a lot of people would say that Chaplin was super transgressive in his comedy. Like, yeah, maybe some class stuff, like the homeless or whatever. But like, he was fairly popular, able to make a lot of people laugh, played right down the middle as far as content goes. And I think we'd all agree he's pretty funny, even today, because he's relying on human universals. Mm-hmm. When you start to get into transgression, now you're not making fun of human universals. You're making fun of society in some kind of ways, which is kind of why my point about, well, back during white supremacy being, you know, part of the law of this country for a Jewish person, Lenny Bruce, finally remember the name, to get up on stage and to be transgressive was shocking and helped move the culture forward in a lot of ways, as opposed to like someone going on stage now and being transgressive by being a white supremacist, which would be what we would consider transgressive now. I just don't see that in the same way as just trying to get a laugh based off of making fun of yourself or making fun of what people are like when they're in love or any of a number of different topics that you could make fun of that would probably not offend anyone in the room.
So when do you need an audience's permission? Like, what are the subjects? Anything that strays from a universal? Anything that's transgressive? Because what's transgressive, that's what I'm saying, is what's transgressive to one person is not transgressive to another person. And so that's what I'm trying to pick apart, is the fact that whose permission do you need? When? How do you get it? How do you know that you have it? It's like, as soon as you start like really looking at that question, it kind of falls apart, in my view. And so it's like when you say, oh, you know, you don't have the audience's permission to make that kind of joke. Well, how do you know? I don't know.
I think I know to a certain extent for audiences.
Why do you think you know, and where do you get that knowledge from?
Well, I'm a human being. I exist around other people. I've been in audiences myself. And, you know, we say transgression, but I remember a joke that stopped a hot room cold. Okay. And I'll not say names, but I was at a comedy theater and there was someone who was hosting the evening, and we had just seen a great set by someone. And he comes up to introduce the next set, and he mentions that I chipped my tooth. And like the whole room kind of went quiet. Like it was just kind of an awkward, not funny moment. And in some ways, I would say for like a host, you don't really have permission to make people uncomfortable. Your job as a host is to just kind of keep the night going along. So in that sense, I would say like that person didn't have permission from that audience that night, at least, to kind of throw a bomb out there that we all were kind of taken back by as sort of a, oh, this sounds like a serious medical thing, but like how stupid are you to actually done that to yourself? Like there was a lot going on there. So I think in some ways we could talk about really transgressive stuff, which like hopefully we're all on the same page about what that might possibly mean. But then even at the same time, there's the permission related to what your job is in the show that night, or the permission related to what that audience, I mean, certainly the permission for a black performer in front of a black audience is going to be very different than a white performer in front of a black audience. And if you don't agree with that, then I think we have other things that we need to talk about first.
This is, yeah, we said it at the top. This is kind of mushy. I mean, because permission sounds to me like how do I say it? Like somebody's granting me an opportunity to do what I want, when I feel like, yeah, I can do whatever I want, I guess. But is there some like unwritten permission when you're going to see a particular style of work? Do we know that this particular edgy comic is going to be on tonight? So we gave him permission to kind of push the envelope, where if we're going to go see a children's show, we're not giving that person permission to make, you know, edgy content or something like that. I don't know where I'm going with this, as I've been saying kind of all podcasts so far, just because there's so many points in my brain. I do want to talk for one moment about the idea of written performance versus improvised performance. I feel like, I guess there could be an argument for both, but I have said something on stage one time. I'm probably multiple times, but I remember one time in particular, I made a comment and the audience shut down. They did not like what I said. My teammates, this is during an improvised performance, my teammates weren't on board with it. And we kind of just like, I kind of sat there in this silence. And I wonder, had they showed up to a sketch show that night and they know that I was thinking about what I was writing beforehand, would that have granted me permission? Would they have said, well, maybe this person has thought of this, and so maybe it's not as off color as it seemed to be right now that he's making it up? I don't know. Is there something there between the idea of the written and the improvised? You know, because I'm just thinking at the top of my head here, obviously, but if I see a sketch show and something seems weird, I guess for me right now, I'm thinking I would give them the benefit of the doubt. Like maybe I'm missing something, because if it's written, they've thought about this. Surely they're not just doing crazy work. But if somebody just says something kind of crazy during an improv show, I might not think they have permission to do so.
So I think that kind of goes to the second part of the question, is what are the consequences of possibly not having permission? So in a written form, I can see it going either way. In a written form, it's like, oh, the performer thought this through. They're trying something here. There's some deliberate message, and maybe I'm not quite getting it, or maybe you missed something. Yeah, totally. But on the other hand, if it's improvised, you'd be like, oh, this person is just making it up. They didn't know. They're kind of just, so we're going to cut them some slack because they didn't know where they were going. They kind of got caught up in the moment. So I can kind of see permission being extended.
Yes.
In both directions. It's hard to even say definitive.
How about this, Jamie? I feel like we as an improv audience tend to give the improvisers on stage permission to fail a little more than we do the written word. The written word, if a stand-up is bombing, we're like, hold on, you've worked on this. Where if we see an improviser make a move that doesn't land, we go, okay, yeah, well, they're making this up. So I think there's an instance where there's some kind of permission there, permission to fail, perhaps.
Yeah. I also wanted to ask you when you said the room went cold, or I forget your exact words, but you said something like that when you made that comment. What do you think was happening? What was the audience experiencing in that moment? what makes an audience go cold, I guess, is the question.
Well, it's so weird. I think I've told you both the example, and I don't know that I want to share it because
you don't have permission.
Because I don't have permission. Yeah. Well, because I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain, really. But I made a move, and so the show had been going well. Maybe that was part of how I could tell that something had changed, because there were you know, some laughs throughout this whole piece, through this improvised set, and then a question was asked of me on stage, and I gave kind of like an edgy remark, and then there were no laughs. And then I saw my teammates' eyes went a little large, like, whoa, are we going to go there type of look? And that's the feeling I could tell. And by the way, maybe I'll share it in another podcast. I still stand true to my decision in that. I didn't say anything crazy or racist or like, it was just, I know people are probably like, well, what was it? I'm scared. What?
Yeah, no, don't worry about it. You have Sam's and my permission to not say it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, because there's that too, right? There's the individual permission, or I give myself permission to make moves I want to make versus the audience giving me permission or my teammates. That's a big one too. And yeah, as I mentioned in the other podcast, I'm on several different improv teams where I don't really have permission to do the play the way I want to play sometimes, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other question is whose permission? When, you know, performers, yourself, the audience, who in the audience, the most sensitive members of the audience or the average members of the audience, or are you just playing for a few who get what you're doing? I mean, it's a huge can of worms that you open once you start looking at this question, and it makes it hard to address because I don't remember being trained or taking classes where people were talking about the nuance of audience permission. They kind of just say,
I do.
Don't play that character. Yeah. Well, please enlighten us, Sam.
Yeah. I mean, I took a class at the PAC Theater with a teacher who was teaching a concept called protection. And at first I thought it was about like how to protect yourself as a performer. And what I later learned was is actually about like how to protect the audience, which I thought was an interesting idea. And I will be honest, I didn't love the class while I was taking it, but I found it to have some really practical applications. It's interesting to talk about permission because there's sort of that famous phrase, it's better to beg for forgiveness than to ask for permission. And what I have seen many people do successfully is if they've done something that's quote unquote not permitted, they've then asked for forgiveness, either by stepping out of the bit to sort of talk to the audience or acknowledging that they made a major mistake in the moment, especially for like improvisers, and sort of gotten forgiveness that way. I even seen stand-up comics like Nicole Schlesinger was doing a whole bit about how as a stand-up, when she's done with a show and she's hungry, the only place to open is like Chinese restaurants at night. And she did an impression of a old Chinese man. This was earlier in 2020. You know, obviously the audience reacted a little bit taken aback, and she kind of said like, oh, come on. Like, it's what this person sounds like. Like, I've met them all. This is an accurate impression, which I thought was kind of interesting and bold in today's circumstances to do it. But I do think that sometimes I've been part of a show, I've had a teammate go too far with something, and it's been important for me to kind of step out and say to the audience, like, we're having a lot of fun here today, but we acknowledge that maybe something we said was not appropriate, and that's not really what that person meant in that moment. And I think this is not something that would fly for a sketch show, but certainly for an improvised show, I think is appropriate. And I just want to circle back to something Chris said, because I thought that was a really good point. You don't have permission to do sex jokes at an elementary school show. That's period. I mean, you won't be invited back. The kids probably won't even get it. People might even boo, or you'll just be ended and cut off immediately. So I think there is at least some level where we could kind of say, okay, for certain types of audience, we might have certain things that are more in play than others. Now, maybe you want to do a super transgressive shows for kids, more power to you. But I think there is some kind of base level for some audiences, at least.
So you might be right in that, Sam. But what is it? Because I don't know if we got to an answer for that, but Chris, when you had that moment where the audience went cold, what does that mean when the audience is going cold? What is that audience member who went cold experiencing? Offense? Fear? Yeah,
offense.
Anger? Yeah. Outrage? Like, I don't know what cold means. You think they personally are offended or they're worried about you saying something that they're not allowed to be a party to? Like, it's, I don't know.
That's a great question. You're right. I don't think based on what I said, there are actual, to be honest, I don't think any individual was personally offended. But I think they might've been offended by the subject matter or the idea that we don't talk about that. Like, for instance, I mean, I can't really think of an example.
Can I interject real quick,
yeah,
though, Chris?
Yeah.
If someone saw you walking down the street, their immediate impression would be like, oh, that's a white guy. But I hope I'm not sharing anything too much, but like your background is a little bit more complicated than that. And I think something that's a little bit tricky about the idea of permission is that there are some non-WASP things that you, Chris Alvarado, could speak to, that if you just let loose on a stage, based on how you look, the audience might not be ready for that. And you might not have permission to do that, even though in maybe a larger sense, culturally and personally, you have a lot of permission to do that. And I think that's one of the trickier aspects of this conversation.
I think that's beautifully said. I mean, listen, a real personal moment for me, and in some ways I'm embarrassed that it took me so long to come to this conclusion, but I think if anything, this year has shown a light on issues that we and matters that I might not have known were so problematic that I see now, and I'm willing to admit that and stuff. So what you were saying about my, like, I look like a white guy. So for people who are listening, my father is from Honduras. I'm biracial. I mean, my name's, you know, I'm half Hispanic and half Irish. But I pass as a 6'3" white freckly person. Now, I want to say all this because for years, my manager always got me auditions for the CBS Diversity Showcase, which is, for those who don't know, an opportunity to work with CBS. All the major networks have it, but in this particular instance, CBS, for minorities, and be that race or sexual preference or anything in between. People that are in the minority get an opportunity to showcase their talents where they otherwise might not have the opportunity. So I auditioned for a couple of years, and kind of, if I'm being honest, well, first of all, I'm an actor. I'm looking for a break. I just want to get in. And so this seemed like, all right, cool. Yeah, I'm Hispanic. Let's do this. And I didn't get it for 2 years in a row. And on the third year, I went straight to callback. And this time I printed out my 23andMe. And I paperclipped a photo of my dad in my file when I gave it to them. And it got a big laugh, right? And I had a good audition. But that year, which was just last year, as I was leaving, I was thinking, this actually isn't for me. Yes, I love the Hispanic side of me. Yes, my father is the love of my life. His name is Erasmo. He's a small brown man. He is my everything. But I don't look that way. And therefore, the way I'm treated in society, be it by police or whatever, is different, unfortunately. And when I left that this last time, I realized that in a sense, I don't have permission, or I don't want to give myself permission, to be honest, to maybe take away an opportunity from somebody that has dealt with real racial issues because of how they look. I don't know if I made that, if I said that eloquently enough, because it's kind of like a touchy thing, but it was a real realization I had of like, wait a second, I don't deserve to be here. Yeah, I want an opportunity in Hollywood like everybody else, but it shouldn't be at the expense of somebody who is actually overcoming something that I don't have to overcome, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's well said.
Thank you. I think that's really interesting. And that's kind of another question I have with all this, because I don't know that I have any answers to any of this. I just kind of have a bunch of questions that I wanted to talk about. But how do you guys feel about the, in my opinion, the lack of of a dividing line between the real world and then the stage world. It feels like what, at least in contemporary Los Angeles, America, when you bring your good and your bad baggage from outside inside, and you have the same permissions you have on the street as you do on the stage. Do you think that's true? Do you think that's good? If that's bad? I mean, and I can't speak to this personally, but I remember reading in a book about comedy that in Japan, it's different. You have a street society self that's composed and respectful. And then when you go into a comedy club, it's understood that this is a safe space and things will get crazy. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's not true. I don't know. But to me that, I don't know. I'm kind of more interested in that way of doing things, because then at least you have an outlet to explore concepts and to challenge norms and to make statements that, you know, when you're at your job 9 to 5, you can't make. So what do you think about any of that?
Have you been to Japan?
I have not, but I want to go when COVID's over.
Yeah, it's a very homogenous culture. I think this is a, in some ways, uniquely United States issue. One thing I think we have to take into perspective is that a lot of other cultures have different relationships to race than we do. And I would say Japan is a country that has a very different relationship to race than the United States does. Not in a negative way in any sense. I just think there are some strong cultural differences there that make a safe space for Japanese people in Japan very different than what we might call a safe space in Los Angeles. And I think even our usage of the term safe space in Los Angeles has evolved from what it was 10 years ago, where it's no longer a safe space to offend anyone, but in some senses, people want a safe space from being offended. And I think that's where a lot of this sort of cultural change has come from in some ways, is sort of reinterpreting what safe space actually means. I appreciate that we should be able to do whatever we want to. I would just say there's so much stuff that you can do whatever you want to that's not going to piss someone off. So, like, why not try to go towards that territory? Like, yeah, we can be whatever we want. Let's be crabs.
Sure, sure. You know, here's an instance, and it kind of this encapsulates everything, including what you just said, Jamie, about like the streets to the stage and that divide, or if it's even there. I did a show years ago, and I think permission is important among teammates. Do you have the permission to slap me? Do I have the permission to grab your butt? You know what I mean? Peter Floyd can slap me all over the place. And Amanda Blake Davis, you know, another person I'm on team with, I could grab her butt or something, or she could do that to me. We are a unit and a team that we give each other permission to do these things. Now, you don't have that permission in a classroom. You don't have the permission to do either of those things. But I'm on a team as an adult with other adults who have – we've all made the decision we can do this. So I was doing a show at Iowa West, and a female teammate of mine and I got into a fight on stage, and we're like – rolling around the stage. It's really big and physical. It's really fun. She's a wonderful performer, and great, show's over. Afterwards in the bar, an audience member comes up to me and says, "You know, it's never right to hit a woman." And I was like, of course I agree with that. She's like, "And what you did up there isn't funny. And for some people that could be triggering." Now, that's interesting, right? The permission that my teammate, the female, gives to me, which is let's go nuts, versus the permission that the audience member did not give to me. Now, it goes kind of back to your point, Jamie, of like, I can't be in the minds of 50 people, so I don't know. But like, that was I had a gut instinct of like, you don't know what you're talking about. We're good. She's good. So this is all I care about. But as I've gotten older or things have changed, I understand what that means. And I will say, in some ways, it's pulled me back, maybe for better. But I do feel inhibited at times, or I second guess a move, because I want to entertain. I don't want anybody to feel triggered or upset by my performance. But, you know, so how far do we go then, right? Maybe somebody says I'm triggered by the letter H or something. Like, I'm being stupid. But like, I am in my head, or was for a while in my head, about what is okay. And I'll tell you what, as a whole, the way I play now, is much safer than the way I used to play. And I don't know if I'm better or worse for it necessarily.
Yeah, I think about that a lot when we talk about whose permission, which I think is a big question, because to me, what strikes me as the answer, of course, I don't know, but what strikes me as the answer to this question is the complainers in the audience, the people who will come up to you after a show to chastise you. It's the squeaky wheel gets the grease, the person who will complain about the thing, even if 49 people understood that it was a thing, or you were making a comment, it's the one person who complains that you remember, you know? And so, I mean, what I would love to do is maybe do a show, try offensive material, and then give it an anonymous survey to the audience. Because I know for me, I've been to thousands of shows and I can't ever remember seeing something offensive. And I think I've been around outraged audience members who found something offensive, but it didn't strike me as offensive because I understood it was a joke. I understood it was a theater. They were trying something. It didn't work. Fine. But it didn't offend me. So, and of course I would never complain. I would never go up to a performer after the show in the parking lot and say, "Hey, what you did was not offensive. I'm just going to go get my hamburger." You know, so it's kind of, that's what kind of rubs me the wrong way about this concept of permission. It's the complainers who get their way. And I don't care for that because I think that puts limits on us as performers and the kinds of shows we can participate in and the kinds of shows we can see. I want to see edgy work where people are pushing boundaries. And I understand that it's theater. That's why, I don't know, I'm kind of a fan of maybe a dividing line between the street and the stage, where the stage is understood that anything can happen kind of thing. And then, I don't know, maybe an anonymous survey. Maybe I'll try to execute that one of these days when we can go back, just to kind of see like, oh, okay, no, 83% actually did find that offensive. Oh no, that one person really hated it, but everyone else seemed okay with it. You know, if we can maybe get like a more of a gauge of like, what's really going on here with this transgressive, offensive topic? I don't know. I'm kind of just, I don't want to give in to the complainers. I want as much freedom and originality as possible. I say this every episode. And those people feel like they get in the way. And sometimes maybe it's valid. Maybe those people are speaking up for the majority of the audience, but sometimes they're not, you know?
But Jamie, I think you can create a space where you can do that. You just have to make sure that's the expectation walking in there.
Right.
If you call the show Trigger Warning, or the show is called You're Going to Be Offended, or Neo-Nazi Comedy Hour, people are going to kind of know what that show is going to be doing. And if they show up to it, they're probably going to give you the permission to do whatever you want to do. As opposed to if you call it, you know, Laugh Time at 8 o'clock, I think people are just going to have a different expectation for that show. And so you're going to have a different level of permission. And I totally take your point. There are complainers. I remember sitting next to someone in a comedy show and they were upset because the person who was guesting in the show was what we would call an attractive woman, you know, skinny, tall, blonde, Los Angeles actress type. And they were not someone with beauty privilege. And so they were talking about how it was beauty privilege that this person got to be on stage. And so at a certain point, if you're going to be offended by everything, then it's going to be hard to do anything. But I do think that individuals can certainly create a space for themselves where they're making it clear what they want to do. Hey,
Sam, I think that's a really interesting point. The permission the audience gives the individuals on stage, meaning this, you know, because of what you just said, this like beauty privilege, right? Even in say an improv ensemble, let's say five people on stage, we're going to give some people permission to do some things and others not. I've experienced this a lot. I'm a handsome guy. I think it's okay to say.
You're very handsome. Very handsome.
Very handsome.
But I have felt this pushback from some people. And I've been on teams with people, and I don't want to name names, some very funny people who have done very well for themselves. Maybe a little more like nerdy looking or kind of like, you know, awkwardy looking, and they can say things and do things that I cannot. And I saw it happen for years on this one particular team. For years, this person would say words that they would burn me if I said the things that this person was saying. You know, it's this, they gave this particular improviser permission. That's really, I hadn't considered that before, Sam, until you brought up that example. That I myself have felt that, And I kind of know it now when I go on stage. I don't do certain things because of the way I look. And even again, even just like white looking 6'3" dude, like, no, they don't think I deserve to be able to talk about certain issues or certain topics that others can. For sure. For sure.
We found that in our performances, you know, I'm a big guy. Jamie's scrawny and little. It's a very different thing when I start being physically aggressive with Jamie as opposed to when he's physically aggressive with me. When he's physically aggressive with me, it's hilarious. When I'm physically aggressive with him, you're like, whoa, like, wait a minute. Are you going to hurt him? It's like, I might, but you know, not today. Not
today. Well, think about you two and the permission that you give each other. I've seen you guys do some incredibly crazy things. I don't know how to say it otherwise. I mean, I can think of one rehearsal, Jamie, where somehow Sam was holding a table over his head, a very large table over his head, fully extended up. And he was asking you to help him with it in the scene. You didn't. Sam's whole body began to shake, but and it was like a really like fun and powerful and risky move in the moment. But besides the actual moment, you two do give each other the permission to make moves that might be almost considered sometimes physically dangerous, if not all, how smart you both are and can go that route. But like, you guys have definitely given each other, I'd say, just about full permission. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I know. Yeah, I think physically more or less that's true. I know Sam has a few more content reservations than I do. I'm willing to play in darker, more controversial stuff than he feels comfortable with. And I respect that because, you know, I'd rather keep Sam as a fellow performer than, you know, burn the bridge and get my one laugh in or whatever. So I think that's probably true.
As you said, Jamie, I have the taste of a monk. So I am about... as white bread down the middle, like if I cannot offend anyone, that's great. But even then, there have been times where you've led us into some dangerous territory. I've tried to ask for some forgiveness for the audience. And then in doing so, I've kind of violated the audience's expectations or permissions. And I feel like in some ways, we've also in the show been able to create a place where like, oh shoot, now I said something wrong and now you're attacking me for it, even though you were kind of the one to introduce the edgy material. So all this stuff is really fluid in the execution. I will say with some other people I've performed with, I actually set up something where it says like, you guys don't have the permission to do this. It happened in multiple shows as kind of like an inside joke with the team and that the team liked it. And it happened, and by the third time it happened, first of all, it died in front of an audience. And then after the show, I was like, look, you don't have permission to do this. Like, I don't know if I have to get physical in order to stop this, but like, stop setting up these situations. And they're like, well, you don't have to do it or whatever. But I was like, it's really weird sometimes. And I think, especially when you're talking like written versus improvised, certainly a lot of the conversations with women have been like, female performers have the permission to stop a scene cold at any point in time that they feel uncomfortable. Like, no one has to commit to a character. You always have a permission to just walk away. And I think that's something that we should definitely give individual performers.
Yeah, I incorporate that ethos in my everyday performance. If there's ever a performance or if there's ever a scene I don't want to be in because it's boring or uninteresting, I will stop a scene cold and leave it. You know, it doesn't even need to be objectionable material. I just like that as a rule of improv, you know. But one thing, Sam, you said, you're talking about creating expectations for the audience as they go into your show, that if you want to do offensive, edgy stuff, that you give the audience notice. Why is that the burden of the performer? Like, why isn't comedy about like, hey, anything can go? Why are there rules to come? Why is the default, hey, it's going to be G, PG, or PG-13, but you won't expect to hear X, Y, Z? Why, when and why is that the expectation of comedy? And is that good or bad? I mean, I know I have my answer, but I know you're the monk in the group. So if you could shed some light on it through a cloud, perhaps.
So I think what's challenging about your perspective on comedy is it's a feudal perspective on comedy, where you have been anointed by a king to have license to fool everyone. You get to speak truth to power. You get to act inappropriately in social situations, and you get to do whatever you want, and you get to do that under the license of a fool granted by a king. And there's this guy named Shakespeare, super popular, and he was sort of part of the movement that invented the box office. So all of a sudden, we no longer have kings as patrons, some queens, financing fools. We have people doing stuff for popular approval. And so now, if you want to be a comedian who, what you would be suggesting is like literally pushing away an audience, if you want to sink your billions of dollars, like Jeff Bezos could 100% do this, right? Like he has more than enough money where he could rent a comedy house every night he wants to. He can put on whatever material. It doesn't matter if a single person shows up to the performance. They have the resources and ability to do so. For most performers, I would say they don't have the ability to push away an audience or promoters or to alienate a theater by doing something that gets the theater bad press. So I think a lot of this is very much a practical need for people, whether it's because social media is overemphasizing things or there is some sort of sense of reality to, yeah, look, I'm a white guy. I can't go on stage in blackface in 2020. Like it's just not a thing I want to do. Now, if you want to host a show called Blackface and it's you and a bunch of white performers showing up and doing blackface, the audience is going to know what that is. I'd be curious if you could get an audience for that show. Maybe there's a smart version of that show. I don't know. I mean, that's when this stuff gets super subjective. But I think for now, especially in improv, and maybe this is a little different in written material, the person who you walk off the street onto the stage as is kind of who you are. It's what people see. It's what background you have. The thing that I've become really appreciative of this year is that I am very limited in my perception of the world. There are many things that I don't fully understand and can't really speak to. And like, frankly, the idea of me trying to play a black woman is ludicrous. It's just not something I would feel confident or capable in doing. So even though I think an audience wouldn't give me a lot of permission in that kind of a role, I think that it would be very hard for me as a performer to even permit myself to go there at this point in time.
Yeah. Let me ask that, because if we're starting to talk about like performance specifics, I've had that note given to me in various classes when I've tried playing different characters or characters with different traits. I specifically remember once where I played a character who was deaf. Like that was just kind of the choice that came to me in that moment. And I played it as respectfully as I can. I know deaf people. I know a little bit of sign language. But the teacher immediately shut it down. I think, Sam, you might have even been in that class with me.
Yeah, I was in that class. You basically got your first line out, and then the teacher was like, you know what? 15 years ago, I probably would have said that this was okay. I've had a recent, you know, come to Jesus moment where I now think differently about these sorts of things. And what I think is interesting about that example is I literally saw something on Twitter yesterday where the deaf community is really upset over the casting of a hearing actor in a scripted show. And I think the idea of disabled actors being cast for disabled roles is something that's starting to gain a lot more visibility, at least. I don't know if it's as effective as some other social justice campaigns, but I'm certainly hearing more about it. So
what about in the improv tricky context where there is no casting? You know, I think that presents its own different set of expectations, because I agree, if you're, you know, deaf people should play deaf people if there is a casting role. But if me as a performer, if that's a character choice that kind of came to me, I don't even remember what the scene was about, but I remember I was inspired to make that choice. It wasn't just random. It was inspired. But to me, it opens up like this slippery slope. And I know that that's a logical fallacy, but some slopes are in fact slippery, where if you can only play your own life experiences that you know, you could never play a character not yourself on stage. So you can only do improv as Chris, Sam, or Jamie, and that's it. You could never have an accent. You can never be from another country. You can never be a different intelligence level, because that's a character that you don't have a personal experience with. And so as soon as you say, you know, that's not your experience to speak to, you know, maybe you don't want to play a black woman because you don't have that experience. But it seems like with that same set of logic, you could never play any character. So again, that's where's the permission? Whose permission? Where's this line? That's kind of just the questions that are bouncing around my head these days. Any thoughts on that?
I think we knew coming into this, but I'm learning even more. It's just really complicated. I mean, when I think about in the teaching perspective, you know, I ask my students to try to be as grounded and real as possible. And I say that even if they're playing a giraffe or a dragon, just like, you know, can we have some groundedness? And I had a student who did a beautiful scene and another student who was there. I got some emails about it from the training center saying like this student was offended by this fictitious material that had taken place, a scene that, and I'm on high alert as a teacher. Don't do that. And I want to keep everyone safe. It's just so hard. And because at some point, the reason why I bring this up, Jamie, is I almost want to go, okay, you can't do anything. Begin. You know, but as somebody who was a drunken, crazy improviser in Chicago, fucking punk rock, I was like, you know, I don't need permission for shit. I'm here to make a fucking stand, whatever. I don't feel that way today anymore anyway. I think Sam was kind of bringing that up. Like, I don't want to do that. I there used to be a moment in time where I wanted people to not give me permission on purpose so I could break shit down or say something meaningful. That's just not what ends up happening. What ends up happening is you open the stage up for anybody to come play, as often happens in jam sessions, jams for people who don't know, or when a bunch of improvisers will come to a theater and you don't know everybody. It's almost like an open mic for improv, and people get up and do scenes, you know, a few people at a time. Inevitably, there's that person who just goes, oh, comedy club, open mic style. And they go up and say shitty things and do crazy things, but they don't have the permission to do so. But then they're telling us, isn't this art? Can't we be free? And it's like, oh gosh, yes, you are like, I'm like, Jamie, you're smart. I trust you. I know who you are as a person. I feel like you're a good person. Okay. You're allowed to push the envelope a little bit if you want, because I know your true intentions. Stranger who I don't know off the street, who's wearing a Donald Duck hat, who's just screaming obscenities, I can't give him the same permission. I can't allow him to explore because he's going to end up offending everybody and then, you know, breaking a window out with his fist. He doesn't have that. It's fucking so complicated. If I can jump in for, I know I just went off on a rant, but here's one point I want to make kind of on the way out. A place where I enjoy permission or giving it in the classroom when I am trying to empower a student. When I go, hey, I give you permission to make moves. I give you permission to be great. Instead of you trying to get it right, I'm giving you permission to own 50% of this scene because there's two of you. You know, that happens a lot. A big guy who's a nice guy, whatever, screaming at a smaller woman in a scene. And the woman oftentimes, you know, takes it or takes on the lower status position. And again, no one's trying to do anything offensive, but I'll tell that girl, or it could be anybody, hey, I give you permission to go nuts, you know, to take your power. I love those moments. I know what's happened to me when someone's like, you had the permission to, again, not do anything you want, but to be powerful as well. And that's a nice moment for me when I get to see them like, this is allowed. You know what I mean? It's fun.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And it also makes me think you always have permission to be you. Mm. And I think for people who maybe their go-to move is playing something that's not them, maybe that's also a little bit of deflection as opposed to like really digging into what they as a person bring to the table and what they can do. Because I think that could be really interesting and there might be a lot more to explore there. And just as we're sort of closing out, a thought, Jamie, when you're sort of saying like, well, can I not play deaf? How are we going to see deaf people on stage? I think nowadays the response would be, well, if you want to produce a show that has a space for deaf characters, then maybe you should find a deaf improviser or at least a deaf actor who you can teach to improvise or something like that. And this is my mantra for 2020 is make space. and how can we make space for people as opposed to taking space when maybe we don't have the permission to do so?
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you guys are in conclusory mode, but I mean, boy, oh boy.
Closing out, I have five more questions.
Well, I mean, even with what you said, I mean, my conclusory remarks are going to be problematizing what you just said is, you know, you always have permission to be you, but who defines you? I mean, we just said earlier that Chris is, you know, half Honduran and half Irish American. He doesn't have permission to do the Honduran side of him. He doesn't have permission to do that. And so that is him, but not to an audience. So again, it's not, you can't really just be yourself. You can't just do you and be okay.
So well, you can always be Irish. I think everyone can always be Irish.
That's true. You can be, well, I mean, but again, even how messed up is that though? Chris has an opportunity to show the Honduran perspective on stage because he knows it from his father and he grew up with that kind of thing, but he can't do it. He has to show the privileged white side. Like, man, oh man, that opens up a whole nother issue when we talking about you have permission to only be the white side of you. It's like, how much of a problem is that in and of itself? I totally understand the logic, but it's like when you push that logic to what it really actually means, it's not really what you wanted. You wanted people to feel safe, welcomed, and be able to have a good time. But as soon as you start really pressing the logic of these mechanisms, it just totally, it gives you results you don't want. And that's why my whole question was, yeah, where is there, whose permission, when, why? What is that? I still don't really know. We might have just made it even more of a hard question to answer by having this conversation. But
I feel like you're relying a lot on logos and that this is something that's more about ethos and pathos to sort of steal from the classic mold. Like logos is reasoning and like our ability as a communicator to reason. But ethos is about your individual credibility. And pathos is about the emotion that you create. And so to me, this isn't about the reasoning side. And I've probably made that mistake too much where I'm like, well, if I use my logic, it should be this way. But then people are like, well, yeah, you're an asshole. You can have that logic all you want. You're just going to be an asshole about it. It's like, oh, okay. So like maybe I have to understand myself better and how I'm affecting the people around me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how we create a set of rules and expectations based on individuals' feelings in the audience. You know, it feels like if you're going to try to propound some kind of rules or expectations or structures or anything like that, you have to have some logical bases. But that's why I said the slippery slope, because it's like, yeah, the logic makes sense within this narrow, convenient range. And if you try to actually follow the logic too far, then you get results that you didn't really actually want when you set up these expectations in the first place. I don't know. People might not have as much of a problem with that. They might just be like, who cares about the logic? Don't do blackface. Fair. But I'm concerned about the logic of the rules that people try to force onto me. Because if they don't make sense, then it's what we talked about in the beginning, is that power structure. As soon as I have this power structure of permission, now it almost invites me to challenge it. Well, okay. Well, where are the lines of this permission? Whose power? Not my power, because I feel constrained by not being able to make creative choices in the moment or having to be self-conscious and things like that. So I don't know. Maybe to a lot of people, this isn't a problem and we've been splitting hairs and they're just going to have turned this off 20 minutes ago. But to me,
it's funny. But Jimmy, it's funny to me when I think about you. It's almost like you're the one person in the crowd that's offended.
I am offended by everybody else's offense.
Right. Because
yeah, we don't have your permission to create permissions.
Because I was thinking.
You don't have my permission to create permissions. No, you don't. And so since I'm going to complain to you, I've dedicated a whole podcast episode to it. Now you know that you are not allowed to require permission of anybody for anything, okay? Take that with you 20 years from now, Chris, okay? I'm going to talk to you far later.
Okay. Because when I step back and I look at performance as a whole, I feel like it's going fine. I feel like there aren't and I could be wrong, but I feel like there aren't millions of performers who are feeling strangled by not being able to do what, quote unquote, whatever they want. There's Broadway shows and comedy shows and stand-up shows and improv shows and short-form Whose Line Is It Anyway shows that have gone on for years and years and years to sold-out houses, and everyone leaves having a pretty good time. You know? I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't know if I want to say it's working just because it's been going on for a long time. We know a lot of things that have been going on for a long time that aren't working. But, I don't know. I don't feel – I don't mind asking for permission from time to time. I don't mind following some of those rules. And I don't know. I also don't have much to say, if I'm being honest.
You don't have a lot of transgressive thoughts or opinions that you need to express on stage.
Yeah, I have a lot to say, as you can tell. I've been talking nonstop. But yes, I don't have a lot. I don't have those.
Fair enough. I think – well – the only reason, and now I know we're closing up. We're finally closing shop. But the issue to me is that I agree with Sam, the expectations of safe spaces and so on and so forth and things like that have been changing in a very particular direction over the past 10, 15 years. I see no evidence that that will change and stop. So while it may be okay now, I worry about another 10 years, you know, and so on and so forth. So I don't know. I'm not the first to have expressed these kinds of thoughts and questions, but I do want people to be cognizant of it. I do want people to be, if you are choosing to create a system of permissions, I would ask, and no one has to ever do what I say, but I would ask that you have thought that through, what that really means, and really pick the permissions that matter, because you're going to lose credibility by picking fights over permissions that don't matter and that make you eventually look ridiculous. And I think as we keep going on this safe space journey where it gets more and more protective of content, protective against content, I guess I should say, I worry that too much will get wrapped up into that. And I'm always a fan of free expression and originality. And I personally worry as an artist that 10 years from now, it might not look the way I want it to. Maybe nobody else cares and everyone's going to be their crabs and they don't have to, you know, they can play their group game as a bunch of crabs on stage and nobody's offended until that's too much because crabs represent a minority population that no one ever thought of. But then they got the nickname crabs in the past 10 years because Donald Trump tweeted something and now you can't be crabs in 10 years.
No. It's the pro animal people who will say crabs are people too. I definitely take your point, and I mean, I hope that we're not heading towards sort of like a, you know, USSR approval of all performances kind of a situation where, of course, like you want to violate the permissions that are being set up in that way. But I feel I kind of agree with both of you guys. I agree with Chris that probably on the whole, we're making the right steps where individuals don't feel too constrained. This is more of a societal question that we have to engage different people on. But then, Jamie, I also agree with you that free speech is very important and that we don't necessarily want to create situations where permission is over restrictive. And so finding a balance there, that's up to our listeners, I guess.
Yeah, because we did not solve a single fucking thing. I think we made it worse. But I
guess ask your forgiveness.
I don't think that the point of this podcast is ever to solve anything or answer any questions perfectly. I think it's to just further the conversation. And actually, speaking of which, we look forward to hearing your thoughts on this topic. I'm sure there are a lot, and I'm happy to learn and to hear about that.
Definitely.
And you can reach out to us immediately now through Instagram. Our Instagram handle is @thecomedyfix. Pretty simple. Send us a DM. Send us a message. Let us know what you think. Also, find me at Chris Alvarado on Instagram, and that's all I have to say about me.
Great. I'm Jamie Parkinen. I'm only on Facebook. Currently, I have a lampshade on my head. Friend me if you want, but give me a message because I get a lot of spam.
I'm Sam Miller. I'm on Twitter at @TheSamMiller. And this has been the Comedy Fix, where we don't fix anything.